Albert Breer of the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He joins us now. Albert, welcome back, buddy. Good to hear you.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was just giving Keith my Cleveland Airport review.
It's the worst airport in America, Albert.
I don't know about that. I mean, you have to be really a special kind of terrible to be as bad as Philly.
Philly's pretty bad. I'm with you.
Philly's like, if you've ever been to Philly, it feels like it's like six bad airports strung together. Like six airports that don't match each other, that are just tied together through a big hallway. It's really bad.
Philly's pretty bad, yeah. That'd have been my second choice.
I will say, I know this is not America. I was just in the Montego Bay airport. I went to Jamaica. I'm not bragging, but I am bragging. That's the worst airport I've ever been in.
Really?
Yeah.
What was bad about it?
Well, it was not well aired. The air conditioning did not work full force. It also...
In Jamaica.
Yeah, in Jamaica when it's 90 outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the amenities, like, it was tough to find an outlet, and then none of the actual stores at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, like, if I wanted something to eat, none of them were open, and so I sat there very hungry for 3 hours before a four-hour flight where they packed me into the back of the plane. That also did not help.
You want to know what was really bad was the Kansas City airport. Now, they have a new airport now. It just opened last year, but before that, that airport was really awful. Like, not in a Philly kind of way, where Philly's just a mismanaged mess that looks like, I mean, a third world type airport, you know? Like, Kansas City was more like, did I just land at I don't know, what small city would you use here? Like, the Fargo airport, you know? There's like one Hudson News and one snack stand behind it in every terminal, and that's it. It was really, really bad. Like, I always made a point of trying to get there at the last possible minute so I wouldn't have to spend any time there.
By the way, LaGuardia is now one of the best airports in America.
I know, and like that was the thing. LaGuardia was up there as being really bad, you know, Dustin? It was. It was really bad for a long time. But now that they have like that 45-year renovation project done.
no, it's great. I used to hate connecting through LaGuardia.
Like, now it's really, really, really nice, yeah.
Albert Breer on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Albert, we were just talking about the name Greg Newsom and whether the Browns should maybe sign him to an extension or maybe trade him for or attempt to trade him for picks this year. Andrew Berry spoke about it today. I'm curious, could you see a possibility, whether it's Greg Newsom or otherwise, where the Browns trade a current veteran for another draft pick to add to their five-pick war chest in this year's draft?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, that would be one position where they've shown that they can draft and develop there, and they already have a big money player in Denzel Ward. You know, so like, I think that would be one of those things where if you look at it and you project a year out and say we're going to lose him in free agency, and I think I can't remember if is this the last year of his contract or does he have the option year?
I think they have to pick up the fifth year option by the May date this year.
Which is fully guaranteed if they pick it up. And so, like, if you were looking at it and say you decide we're not going to pick it up because it's fully guaranteed, it's a lump sum, we just can't do it, whatever, then yeah, I think, like, being able to trade him and trade him now to give the other team in the deal the fifth-year option and the option to pick that up would might behoove you, yeah. So, I mean, Greg Newsom is a really good player, and the Browns were really good at that corner position last year, and they've got some decent depth there with Emerson and those guys too. I think they might have some flexibility to do something there. Obviously, some other team would need to make it worth their while.
So with that, I know it's tough when we talk about player value from a pick perspective because it's who the hell really knows. Do we have like a deal that we could look at and say – that value might be similar to how people might be looking at Greg Newsom if they wanted to trade for him?
You know, like, a lot of times what happens is that, you know, like, it can be relative to the position in the draft. And one thing that would be working against the Browns here is, I don't know if there's like a Jalen Ramsey in this year's class, but you do have Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell. And then beyond that, there's pretty good depth at corner. So that could work against the Browns a little bit. Whereas, like, you know, if this was less deep, if this class was less deep at that position, you can see a team get out of the first round and look at their board and be like, oh, crap, like, this isn't going to play out in a way we like it. So, you know, like, let's go and flip a second round pick for him, you know? And that's the other part of it for the Browns too, is if you're Cleveland and you look at it and say, we're going to let him go in free agency, and you think because he plays a premium position, he's going to get a nice deal. There's also the opportunity that you could get a comp pick in 2023 for him, or 2026 for him. And, you know, so you'd have to balance it. Like, do we want the extra year with him and then we just take the comp pick back, or do we want the pick now? You know, there's just a bunch of moving parts when you're talking about a transaction like that.
Albert, is this draft considered to be a good draft?
At the top, yes. I would say, you know, the group at the in the top half of the first round, really, really good. You know, obviously you have the four quarterbacks likely to go in the top 10. You have three receivers who I think would be top 10 in any draft. You have a really good crew of tackles. I think you could have seven tackles going in the first round. So you have guys who, you know, some are potentially blue chip players at premium positions at the top of the draft, which defines a draft. You know, you also have some other guys at some other positions. I mentioned the two corners, guys who have a chance to be really good players. Dallas Turner, another premium position player, guys, an edge rusher from Alabama, who, like, physically might be more impressive than his old teammate, Will Anderson. Not as productive, of course, in college, but physically really, really impressive. So you have that. Like, the top of the draft's really good, and it should make for an awesome Thursday night next week. And trust me, I'm the guy who usually has to throw water on everybody and say, no, this draft isn't very good. This is a really good draft at the top. I think what's fascinating about the way the draft class breaks down, though, Dustin, is it sort of falls off a cliff after the fourth round. So you have, you know, a really good group at the top, a good group beyond that, like good depth at several positions into the third and fourth rounds, and then it falls off a cliff. And you might ask why that is. Well, a big part of it's the transfer portal and NIL. You know, it used to be that, you know, you'd have 100, 120 guys declaring for the draft every year. I think the number this year was like 60. It was like about half of what it was a few years ago. And the reason why is guys who are fifth and sixth and seventh round picks, it's a better deal for them to go back to school, make some more NIL money. Some of these guys can transfer if they need to. They just have more options at that level, and there's more financial benefit at that level to stay. And I think that's sort of been like a hidden benefit to everybody of NIL and the portal, is that, you know, it's more, the idea of staying in school is more realistic for more of these guys because of the opportunity that those things afford them.
Albert, obviously, every draft has its phases, right? There's the what's going to happen the first round pick. This year, relatively early, right around before free agency, it was tipped that it's going to be Caleb Williams. And then, you know, it's this player's moment where everybody talks about him. And, you know, we had the even though he's another quarterback, we had the Jaden Daniels moment, or we talk about the team, like Minnesota trading up for a second first round pick. Given that we're 1 week out, and we've been through some of these phases already, where does the intrigue start in this draft?
I would say three. You know, I think Washington sticks and picks. And my guess would be it'd be Jaden Daniels. So then you get down to three, and I think Drake May is going to go there. I just don't know what team is going to pick him. It could be New England. It could be Minnesota coming up. It could be the Giants coming up. And then after that, you have an Arizona team sitting at four that's driving a really hard bargain for that pick, right? So Monty Austin-Ford is not going to give that pick away. And I think he'd be comfortable sticking there and potentially taking Marvin Harrison Jr. So does he do that, or does he trade out? And if he doesn't trade out, then I think the Chargers would like to trade out, right? Because then you have J.J. falling in another spot, and somebody come up and get him at five. You have the Giants at six, who could move up or could stick. If they stick there, has all the quarterback stuff been smoke? And then you kind of go on down the line, and you can see, okay, like, how do the receivers come off the board? How do the tackles come off the board? Where does Penix go? I just think that, like, once you get past those first two picks, it could get a little chaotic. And, you know, the teams, like, looking to trade potentially, New England at three could trade. I don't think it's likely, but they could trade. I think the Cardinals and Chargers at four and five are very open to it. You get a little further down the line, like, I'm not sure the Bears stick at nine. They could go down. They could come up. And then you have some teams a little further down, you know, like the Indianapolis Colts at 15, the Jaguars at 17, that could come up for an offensive skill player. So I think, you know, there is a – because of the quality of players at the top of the draft, I think there's a decent chance you have a relatively chaotic first round after the first 20 minutes or so. And I think the first 20 minutes or so will probably be, you know, the chalk picks that we all expect.
Albert, obviously this draft is notorious because Bill Belichick will not be making picks. He will be analyzing them, as he will be a member of the media for this one. And part of the buildup on this is Bill has said he has never had coffee. So, one, like never had a sip of coffee in his life. One, do you believe him? And two, what is the thing that everybody else has indulged in their life? It can be food. It can be literally anything that you've never indulged in, if there is such a thing.
Okay, so I think it's I think it's sort of maybe sociopathic behavior, but I never rule anything out with Bill. The idea of not having coffee. I actually didn't start drinking coffee until I was out of college. And the first time I ever drank coffee was actually to get myself woken up so I could start drinking again at a tailgate at an Ohio State game. So that was my first year out of college, and then I was like, oh, that really worked. And then, of course, like everybody else, I wound up being hooked like a few weeks later. The thing I have had that I haven't had that, you know what it would be? You know what I think is disgusting that most people love is peanut butter. So I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. How about that?
I don't even know what we're doing.
Who are you?
I had a follow-up question to the Belichick
you're
thing.
You're an established, esteemed...
Now we're going to have to blow off the break.
...member of the society. And
so that was pretty good.
Yeah, like, how have you never had in your life a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Because I hate peanut butter.
Like, as a child, you hated it?
Yep.
Like, you came out of the womb, none of that, man.
And the weird thing is, guys, like, the... The peanut butter thing, like I there were certain things that I thought that sort of like, you know, like I just didn't like when I was younger, even like into my 20s, right? Like sushi, guacamole that I wound up loving later, right? Like there are certain things that like I just kind of like I grew into it. Even some seafood. I hated seafood when I was a kid, and then I wound up, you know, I like certain seafoods now, you know. Peanut butter, I never turned the corner on. So I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
So,
how about that?
So how okay. Is it like, my wife is anti-smoking. My wife. And like, if I have had a cigarette, I'm not a smoker, but I will occasionally socially smoke. My wife will not kiss me if I have had a cigarette. So
my wife once caught me sneaking a heater with one of my college buddies in Nashville. We were at a rooftop bar. And the captain had turned the no smoking sign off, and my buddy happened to have a fresh pack of Parliaments, and we ran downstairs, and I thought she didn't see me go down to the corner, and I got tapped in the shoulder with a not friendly look on my wife's face.
So with that though, is your peanut butter aversion so strong that if she just ate like a Reese's peanut butter cup, you won't kiss her?
No, it's not that bad.
She thinks I'm weird.
She loves peanut butter, so she thinks I'm weird.
She's correct.
Because I will eat peanuts, and I do like peanuts.
What?
So she thinks that's really weird that I like peanuts, and I'll eat peanuts willingly, and like it's not like I have to force it. Like I actually, you know, if I go to a ball game, I 100% will eat peanuts. She thinks it's weird that I like peanuts but hate peanut butter.
Yeah, we're not even going to ask any more sports questions. We're just now judging you. That is wildly inconsistent. And
Isn't it weird? Yeah, it is.
I don't really take shame very often, although I will do it to another member of the station later in the show. I shame you, sir. This take is bizarre to me. Maybe it's because this is a body built on peanut butter.
Yeah, I can't. Like I there are certain things where, like, you know, we do like the meal kits. We get like HelloFresh at our house. And there's peanut butter that goes into some of the things where I'm fine with it. Like, so if it's like mixed into something, and like I can kind of block out like what I'm, you know, that it's in there, then it's fine. But I just, honestly, guys, it's like since I was a little kid, I didn't like milk either when I was a little kid. So there's another one, you know. It's not like I've never had a glass of milk. You know what I mean? But I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Would you consider it at some point?
What?
Peanut butter?
Yeah, what we're talking about here.
Are we talking about, like, you know, where I'm there in training camp or something? You guys are going to bring me in the studio and we're going to do some sort of stunt where I got to force a peanut butter and jelly sandwich
down? I don't know that we'd call it a stunt. We'd say we're going to let you have a
video
sandwich.
Cameras on me and stuff.
We're going to let you try the most popular sandwich in the history of the world.
Yeah, I wonder
yes,
if, like,
it's
like,
an experiment.
Like, do you think I would eat it and then I would, like, all of a sudden get religion
Welcome
on it?
Welcome to Fear
and, like,
Factor.
Have a lot of regrets.
Yeah. I actually think it'd be like you ate one and, like, 6 months later you're 400 pounds because you can't stop eating them. Real quick. So can somebody ask us on Twitter, does this mean you've never had a Reese's cup and you don't like Reese's cups?
Never had a Reese's cup.
Good God. All right. We're done. Albert, you're wonderful. We're very excited for the draft next week.
By the way, I can add to that right now in my kitchen at home. There is a glass canister full of Reese's cups. I won't touch them.
That's it. Bye, Albert. Bye. Albert Breer.
Great segment. You gave us enough content for the rest of the show.
The North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That's enough of that. You'll hear him again next Thursday, not before that. If he wants to move to Wednesday, I need 7 days.
Oh, he's doing draft day.
I need until next Thursday to calm down. I don't think we're going to be able to cover everything, every which way that is the craziest damn thing I've ever heard somebody say. Albert Breer.
Pretty wild. I mean, it was so wild that you and I stopped dead in our tracks in the interview and looked at each other and we were like,
we were just doing this.
People don't know what that is, but we do.
Yeah. I totally understand that there are kids out there that don't like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
But I, like, once you get to, like, middle school, like, I think I survived a year where my parents had to, like, work a lot. I think I survived a year on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches alone. And then, like, you get older and you start maybe having a glass of milk with them. Just anything. You can drink almost anything while eating a peanut butter sandwich and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and it makes it better. You have a beer with it, and it doesn't kill the peanut. I'm not exaggerating. It is the most flawless.
Yeah, there's, like, peanut butter and jelly flavor beer.
Yep. What was the one? Oh, that was.
Oh, I remember it was the peanut butter beer.
Yeah. There's also whiskey.
Like, yeah. Oh, peanut butter. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that. What's that name of it? Screwball.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had a peanut butter
actually
and jelly.
Wasn't terrible.
I actually had a peanut butter and jelly cocktail for a minute. I can't remember the recipe now to save my life. But yeah, you can have. What is it?
You know what they call it?
What's that?
The PBJ.
The PB&J, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I just can't, I don't even know how to move on with the show that Albert said this. Like,
yeah, I mean, one of the greatest snacks in the history of snacks is the Uncrustable.
Yes. Oh, and kids today have no idea. We used to have to cut our own crusts off.
We used to
off.
Have to cut our own corners.
Yeah. And, like, when you, up until you're like five, your mom would do it for you. And you hit six, and she was like, hit the bricks, Charlie, do it yourself.
Golly.
I'm not a big fan of the Uncrustables, to be honest.
See, but again,
homemade's better because you could just put as much as you want.
Okay, that's a great take. Like, because yes, you can the portion control.
I probably
control,
put
you
four
own.
Times the amount of peanut butter on a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Totally acceptable.
But
take.
Do you make sure that you eat the Uncrustables cold?
They can't be just, like, sitting out warm. Like, if you put them in the freezer and let them thaw out a little bit, whatever.
Which you're supposed to. Technically, you're supposed to put them in the freezer and then, like, put them in the fridge to let them thaw for, like, I don't know, a few hours, and then they're beautiful.
Have you guys ever done fried PB&J?
Of course.
I mean, what are you even talking about?
You like sex?
Yeah.
I mean, you sex addict? Thing?
You sex addict? I don't, like, every once in a while you find it. How I Met Your Mother did a great bit on this.
Great show.
Great show about the glass shattering. When you find something out about somebody that changes the way you perceive them and you can never go back from, this might be it for Albert. And it is, okay, it is more than just one thing. It is equally, I don't like peanut butter. Then I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which, by the way, how do you know if you don't like it if you've never had it? Then I've never had a peanut butter cup. And then finally, I like peanuts.